This is Aaron Pednotti, and today I'm interviewing David Howard King, the managing editor and associate publisher of the Collaborative Magazine, about the next issue that's coming out. In the interest of full disclosure, I should point out that I am myself being interviewed for that issue, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But to start out, I just want to ask you, David, about the issue and what it's going to contain.
So, you know, we're coming off a big summer with a wealth of events in the area that I think some are getting a lot of exposure. We all know that the ballet is at SPAC, and Glimmerglass Opera has amazing internationally recognized programming. But then there are other places like Basilica Hudson and the Lumberyard, which also have things like that. So I have two interviews that I was really excited to get, one with the frontman of the band Low, Alan Sparhawk, who's coming to Basilica Soundscape in September. Low just released this album, Double Negative, that has just been acclaimed, and they've been around for 20 or 30 years now. He had a lot of interesting things to say about creativity and depression and things like that, mental health and the arts. And then I interviewed Rachel Chavkin. She's the director of Hadestown, which was the Tony-winning, award-winning Broadway play. She was the only female director directing on Broadway last year, and she won. And she's developing this new project that essentially looks at Gone with the Wind as though it's a Confederate monument. And so it's this work of theater and dance, and it's put on by this 24 group of people called The Team. They're all writers, they're all contributors, and it's going on at the Lumberyard in August. So she had a lot to say about accessibility and diversity in the theater and what a place like the Lumberyard does for her, which is sort of give for her residency in a place to develop these new experimental work.
So has that particular project generated any controversy that you're aware of?
I don't know yet. It's pretty early on, but I imagine it will, because it's very, you know, it's pointed. And she said that after they put on some early performances of it here, they're going to go workshop it in the Deep South and travel around the country sort of in various workshops to get it right. And right now it's more of an experimental dance piece, but eventually she expects it to take shape as something that more resembles theater, and then expects it to debut on Broadway in, or somewhere in 2021. So there's a lot of work going on it still, but it was cool to hear about.
And does this issue have a larger theme that it's addressing?
Yeah, so we're taking on arts education a bit here. Obviously, during the summer, there are a lot of programs for kids through places like SPAC or Proctor's or the Arts Center, but also for adults. And one of the things we're exploring is how these sort of programs allow artists not only to make money by teaching, but to further their craft, challenge themselves, and pass on, in some cases, you know, a lifetime worth of knowledge and expertise about a certain creative world. I spent some time at classes across the region, which are neat. And then Katie Cusack has a large feature about arts letters and numbers, which is a place in Avril Park that does these residencies where people come from around the world to develop their projects. So that's another sort of aspect. But it's sort of amazing what a wealth there is of internationally acclaimed artists coming to the area and in the area this summer, and the issue does celebrate that in a lot of ways.
So can you share some of the specifics on what you've learned about the state of arts education in the capital region from putting this particular issue together?
What's interesting is I think there's a surge in interest in these sort of classes, and they might not be long-term classes, but they're things where people want to learn how to make something and they want to walk away adding a skill to their repertoire, and rather than maybe spending all their money on entertainment, they're spending it on being able to do pottery or create jewelry, and then they're going to take that and eventually put it online and sell their jewelry or whatnot. Or it could be, you know, much more of a creative thing. They're looking to get into mural making or things like that, and it benefits the artists who are working in the area because they can pass on the knowledge and support themselves and do their own creative projects. And I mean, this isn't something new anywhere, obviously, but talking to people, it does seem like they think there has been a surge of interest in this sort of maker economy. So it was fun to see it in action.
And from what I understand, the Collaborative is opening itself up to creative contributions from artists and also for people who might just want to write for it. So if you're interested in doing that, how would you go about getting in touch and setting up some sort of collaborative relationship?
So you can always email us at thecollaborativevoice@gmail.com or dking@proctors.org. We're literally looking to run pictures of your work, whether that is jewelry or art or, you know, lyrics to a song or poetry. We want to get people's new work in front of our readers and celebrate that and the creativity in the region. So that's one way to do it. You can reach out to Facebook and social media, all that good stuff. And we also are looking for writers who want to write on what's going on in the region creatively, including professors or teachers, artists, the whole gamut. We want folks to feel like we're the place to talk about what's going on in arts in the region.
Towards the beginning of the summer, I also came to the Beats on the Patio event that you hosted at Superior Merchandise. Are you still hosting musical events and other types of events around the area?
Yeah, we've got one more event coming up at Superior Merchandise. I believe it's around the 23rd. And Charles O'Moore, who's a soul singer, will be there, as well as Lone Phone Booth. And then I believe we're hosting two events at the Albany Distilling Company's Bottle Shop, which is a really neat place if you want to check out some cool architecture and what they've done with this, what was essentially a lost building. You know, they've turned it into a really cool place to drink and listen to music. And we've got sort of a mishmash of artists, including Ozzy, great rapper, and... Oh, I should also say, sorry, we have two more events at Superior Merchandise, and one of them includes a folk bill, and just all of these generally have a theme or a vibe, and all the money goes to the artists rather than to us, so it's just a good way to get people together and out to these neat places. And I have to say, our last one with The Age was just a blowout. It was so insanely packed. I don't know how Superior Merch did it, but it was amazing, so we want to thank everyone for coming to that.
And when that series of events is over, are you going to be hosting other musical events around the area as well?
Yes, we have plans to keep doing this. We want to expand, and we expect also leading up to the Eddies Awards next year, there are going to be a series of musical events. And we're hoping to put on something larger that includes folks showing their physical art along with musicians doing things. And those sort of events will take place a lot more in the future.
Well, that sounds like a busy schedule. I wish you luck with it.
Thank you. And then... So let's talk about, you know, so I am interviewing you for the issue about your project, and I'm really curious about the trip. You're going over here and over to England, correct? I might get this wrong, but to map this castle, essentially, right?
Well, yeah, it's sort of a castle. It's the house of an 18th century writer named Horace Walpole, who was the son of the first Whig prime minister of England. So he had a ton of money at his disposal. He was a gentleman of leisure. He built himself a giant Gothic neo-medieval revival mansion. And he ended up using the house that he had built for himself for his novella, The Castle of Otranto, which was published in 1764, as an inspiration for the setting. So what we're going to do is go over there and create a three-dimensional map of the place so that people can go around and experience it as a virtual reality simulation. And then there will be drop-down menu options at different locations in the virtual recreation of the actual house that allow you to see a scene from the novel play out before you. So the setting will become a little distorted, a little more animated, a little more gothic and strange. And you'll be able to see the relationship between the actual physical space and the work of fiction.
So my question is, I've encountered a lot of VR games that are sort of, you know, expanding what a game or storytelling might be. But this seems even more specialized and interesting and like something that people might want to approach not as a game, but more as like a book or a work of, obviously, of learning. But how do you expect it to be consumed? I mean, how do you want people to come across it?
Well, that's a good question. And I actually just participated in the Storytellers Institute at Skidmore College. And one of the people who was involved in the fellowship suggested to me that I ought to find a way to make the entire simulation interactive somehow. So to open up the fictional scenes from the book, you ought to be involved in some sort of treasure hunt in the actual physical location. And I thought that that was really useful advice, because I think if it's just a virtual guided tour where some sort of overlaid voice is telling you historical information about the objects you're looking at, it might not be so interesting. But if we find a way to make the setting more interactive and to work in a narrative component, that will add an element of interest to it that makes it a little bit more like a game. And so that's what we're going to try to do. But until we actually have the footage, we're sort of working with ideas more than materials at our disposal. So some of that is going to have to wait until we've actually gone over and filmed some of the stuff.
It doesn't sound like it's going to be cheap either. Sounds like this could be quite a long-term project for you.
Yeah, well, the idea is to get the virtual simulation of the space done first. And we know how to do that because we've got people with skills with Unity programming and photogrammetry involved in the project. But once we do that, we're going to apply for more grant funding so that we'll be able to find a source of capital for the animation, which is not cheap, to get that done.
Well, that sounds awesome. I'm really excited to hear more about it and to see the results, because, I mean, this is the sort of thing that I dream of being involved, or had dreamt about being involved in as a kid, but I can't do math and programming and things like that. So, very jealous.
Well, maybe we'll bring you on board as a creative contributor, and we'll definitely keep you posted on it as the project develops. So, thanks.
Thank you. Congratulations.